Mecca, Sunday, June 14th, 2015. This episode of the MacCast is brought to you by Lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a 10-day free trial, visit lynda.com/MacCast. That's lynda.com/MacCast. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is a show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, I have just got back from vacation, as you may know if you've listened to the past few episodes. I was letting you know. Every time around this time of year, I take a vacation, head to the central coast of California, and just do a little bit of camping, and it always seems to coincide, unfortunately, with WWDC. That's been happening for years now, and as much as I'd love to head off to WWDC, I also enjoy my family time and my vacation time, so that wins out in this case. And the good news is I come back pretty relaxed and refreshed, ready to get back into all of the details. I have been diving into the announcements from WWDC. I just got back yesterday. Lots of stuff to cover. I kind of follow along when I'm on vacation, honestly, because guess what? We've got iPhones and iPads, and I have cellular data plan and all those sorts of things. So I'm not totally disconnected. And even the day of the event, I did watch the keynote live, as many of you know if you were following me on Twitter. So I watched the full keynote. I'm going to go back and rewatch it again. I'm making copious notes and reading everything that I can to get all of the details. Because what happens at WWDC, right, is Apple presents what they want to present. And in the thick of it, you get excited, you get caught up in the moment, and we get the reality distortion field. You know, a lot of people attributed that to Steve Jobs, but I think just Apple itself, especially around keynotes, has this distortion field. And everything seems awesome and great. And then as you come down from that and start to dig in and start to look at the details, you start to get more information. Some of it good, some of it, you know, a lot of questions that you might have. And there are a lot of questions coming out of this keynote. I think the thing that I was most excited about was the one more thing, which is Apple's music service, which we're going to get at the end of the month, June 30th, along with the release of iOS 8.4. So I'm very much looking forward to trying that out. And it seems amazing on the surface. But I am going to save all that because I am taking my notes. I'm going to dive in the next episode, I promise you. But because I just got back now, I haven't had a lot of time to prep. I had a show ready to go in the can for you. And I think you're going to like this because a lot of you have been asking me questions about Apple's Photos application. And just making the transition from iPhoto to Photos. And you know it's something I've done recently myself. We've talked a little bit about it on the show. I've given a few hints and tips and tricks. I recently just moved into using the iCloud Photo Library, which I'm actually really enjoying. About the only disadvantage to that was having to buy more storage from Apple. Not overly expensive, but it's not the cheapest storage out there either. And I think I offered up recently my alternative to you, which is I've been playing around with Flickr, which offers a terabyte of free online storage. And that's going well as well, also. But we've talked about that already. So what I wanted to do was do a deep dive into Photos. And luckily, a friend of mine actually literally wrote the video field guide or the video guide on Photos. And that's David Sparks. Some of you know, some of you may have already seen his video field guide. But I invited him on the show. I figured he'd be the perfect person to talk to about Photos and really getting into it. So I think you're really going to like this episode. But before I get into that, I do need to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors. And that is Lynda.com. Lynda.com is for problem solvers, for the curious, for people who want to make things happen. Maybe you're looking to master Excel or Word. You want to learn negotiation tactics, maybe build a website. They've got great tutorials on WordPress and other platforms for building websites. Maybe you want to boost your Photoshop skills or just get better at photography. Whatever it might be, you can go to lynda.com right now and feed your curious mind. And coming off WWDC, I think a great thing to go to Lynda for is coding, for learning how to make an iOS app, for learning how to make a Mac application. And as you know, Apple last year announced Swift as their major new programming language for building iOS and Mac applications. Lynda.com has great courses on learning Swift that you can go brush up on right now. And they announced Swift 2, which is coming up. Lynda's constantly updating their courses, so I'm sure they're already hard at work at looking at all the stuff that's in Swift 2, and as soon as they can, they're going to start having those courses. But why not get up to speed just with Swift in general? If you head over to lynda.com right now, what they have is they have courses like Essential Swift or Swift Essential Training. There's also a Swift Programming Language First Look. If you are moving over from Objective-C, maybe you've already done some of that. They have a whole course on comparing Swift with Objective-C. There's also iOS app development with Swift Essential Training. So just a myriad of courses you can dive in right now, get up to speed with Swift, and then you'll be ready to go when they update their courses, have the new Swift 2 courses available. You can transition right into those, and it'll be quick and easy. It is a really great way to learn. They have great instructors over there. You can watch and learn from top experts who are passionate about teaching. You can stream thousands of video courses on demand. They allow you to learn on your own schedule, so they have them broken up into little bite-sized chunks. You can take them on one at a time over a period, or you can do it all at once. It's really up to you. They have a transcript that goes along with each course, and if you happen to miss something or want to come back and review something, the transcript's really cool because you can actually click on a word and it will jump back to that portion of the video. You can take notes as you go, come back and refer to them later. You can download tutorials and training materials. You could even get access to all of the courses on your mobile devices, whether you're on iOS or Android. And you can create and save playlists for different courses that you want to watch, customize your learning path, share with your friends and colleagues, other team members. It is really great. I think you're going to love it. And best of all, you can try it out for free for 10 days. And along with your lynda.com membership, you get unlimited access to all of their training videos, hundreds of topics. Literally, they've got over 3,000 courses. So whatever you're looking for, if you're looking to become a programmer, you're looking to become an industry expert, you're just passionate about your hobby, maybe you're very into photography or video, there's great courses for improving those kinds of skills. Or maybe you just want to learn something new. I encourage you to visit lynda.com/maccast right now to sign up for your free 10-day trial. That's lynda.com/maccast. You're really going to like it. Check them out. And a big thank you to Lynda for their continued support of the MacCast. And speaking of learning something new, Photos, macOS 10 Photos. Maybe you've made the transition already and you're trying to figure this whole thing out. Maybe you're just one of the people that's been sitting on the fence and who has emailed me and said, you know, what's going on with Photos? I'm an Aperture user. Should I move over to Photos? I've been using iPhoto. I absolutely love it. I'm a little afraid to get into Photos because of all the changes, all the differences. We're going to dispel all of that. Hopefully answer a lot of your questions in this episode. I was pleased and very happy that my friend David Sparks agreed to come and talk to us. So here's David and I getting really, really deep into Photos for OS X.
Hey, David, how you doing?
Outstanding. How are you today, Adam?
Good. Just trying to get this photo stuff figured out.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's been all good news for the last couple months because, like, even 6 months ago, Photos was just a hot mess. And now all of a sudden, there's some real options out there.
Yeah. So I wanted to get you on as the resident Photos expert, at least in my world, I think. You've spent quite a bit of time with it, including, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, your new latest field guide video tutorials.
Yeah.
But really, I was hoping that we could get together and maybe fill people in. I've done some hints and tips and tricks a little bit here and there for my listeners, but I really kind of wanted to do a deeper dive, and I wanted to get somebody who has had a little more experience with it. So I thought you would be the perfect person to do that. And where I figured we'd start is just with transitioning, because I don't know what you've heard from folks, but I know that I've received emails. A lot of people are confused about just making the transition. You know, they've upgraded to the latest version of Yosemite. They see photos there. I think Kelly Gamont was even at a point where she's like, I'm not even pulling the trigger on that thing. I look at the icon and there's no way I'm launching it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, have you encountered that? What do you say to folks who are sitting on the fence going, I have iPhoto. I like iPhoto. I've heard a few things about photos. You know, should I make the switch? Should I not?
Well, I have, you know, because I talked about it on the Mac Power Users and a couple other places, and mm-hmm. I released this video field guide. So I've actually got a lot of feedback on it. Mm-hmm. And I can tell people that by the vast majority, the email I've received has been largely positive about the transition. And there are some hiccups in there, and we'll talk about them. But I don't think you should be too afraid of it. That being said, I have received a couple emails from people that had something go wrong. I had one person send me an email where they said it made copies of all their pictures. They got two copies of them all. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really figured out exactly what went wrong there. And I have heard from some people that said, oh yeah, it took forever. Or I had someone write in and say, I lost 100 pictures. I have like 26,000. And then I finished it and it said it had, you know, 25,900, and I can't figure out where those 100 went. So there have been a few people that have had some issues.
Right.
But, overall, I've heard largely very positive things from people. And when you were asking the question, you said, well, what if I'm that person who loves iPhoto? First of all, congratulations to you, because I'm not sure there are many of you.
And, I liked iPhoto. I was a pretty happy iPhoto user myself.
Well, were you, are you today? I guess my question. Okay, so for me, my journey was I used Aputure for many years, and then I realized, you know, I don't need this much power, and I switched to iPhoto, and I was happy with it. And then over the last couple of years, I'd pretty much given up on it because my library was of a size that iPhoto would just grind to a halt. Every time I'd turn it on, I'd need to go like make tea or something. It just took so long.
Wait, so a couple questions. So what size is that library?
26,000.
Oh, you have 26. See, my wife has 80,000, and iPhoto seems to run fine for her. I only have 16, so
maybe it's the image sizes. I shot a lot of RAW over the years.
Oh yeah, we don't mess with RAW in my family, so that could be part of it. The other thing before we get too far off the track, because you mentioned some people having issues. You know, of course, everybody who listens to my show knows I'm fanatical about backup, and I would tell everybody not to, you know, transition at all without having at least a few backups of your iPhoto library. Do you happen to know, because I haven't tried this, is there a rollback? Because I know it keeps iPhoto still there, but it kind of does some things behind the scenes with the libraries, right, in terms of sort of setting up symbolic links within the libraries themselves.
Yes.
So is there a like, oh, you know, I moved to Photos is missing, say those 100 photos that person was missing. Can they sort of completely roll back and start the transition over?
Yeah. So let me back up on that. First point is the point you made about backup is an excellent one. And not only do you back up your iPhoto library, because these are your pictures, probably the most important data on your computer, I strongly recommend you also do an export out of iPhoto and just export all your images. It has a nice feature where it can save them into folders by projects. And just, you know, hard drives are cheap. So have your pictures backed up in a couple different formats in at least a couple different places before you do anything. I mean, that's a given. And
right. And I'm assuming you're saying when you export, I think there's an option to export the originals, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And just get the pictures, you know, make sure you have them out there. And I have a sickness about backup, so
yeah, me too.
You don't want to know how many I did. In fact, I covered it in the screencast. So,
okay, so people can watch that.
But you certainly, before you do any of this stuff, back it all up. Now, that being said, the way Photos works is, you know, Apple was aware that photo libraries are very big for some people, and they knew that, like, if you've got an SSD and you've got 100 gigabyte iPhoto library on it, and then you start up the new Photos app, adding another 100 gigs to your hard drive is going to probably be a problem for a lot of people, right. And they didn't want that to happen. So basically, they're using hard links so they can – there's only one copy of the image of you at Disneyland on your drive. Right. And the iPhoto library sees it and the Photos library sees it. So your iPhoto library is still fully intact. Now, that being said, once you go into Photos and you start editing pictures, if you open up iPhoto, you're not going to see those edits because those edits took place in Photos. So you're fine. My recommendation is, number one, you back up your iPhoto library off your computer entirely, so you've got an old version.
Right.
And then you've got the ability to just go ahead and make the transition. If something goes wrong, you can essentially roll back by just saying, okay, I'm just going to work from this older copy.
Right.
If you do this right, there should be no potential for losing images. And if you back everything up, you certainly won't lose any.
Right. But so if I backed up that original iPhoto library and I get into Photos and I go, wait, there's pictures missing, there's something wrong, I would assume that the rollback procedure would be go back to that pre-migration iPhoto library, restore that, open up iPhoto, make sure everything's there, and then retry to do the migration again to Photos. Can you do that?
Or you could even just, like, since you've got the backup, but you've also got, you're still going to have a document on your hard drive called iPhoto Library.
Right.
And you could just open that up.
But it still doesn't have all the originals in there, right?
Yeah, it does. They're hard links. They're both looking at the same image files.
Oh, okay.
So you could go and if you say, well, there's not the pictures from that day we went to the park, and you could go and export them from iPhoto and just copy them into Photos.
Rather than having to do the whole migration all over again.
Yeah. And the problem with that one listener was he didn't know which 100 pictures they were.
Right.
I wrote them back and we're still kind of in the dialogue. But I suspect it may be there were duplicates or, you know, it could be something silly. When it's just a small number like that, I suspect he may not have lost.
Photos.
Yeah. But who knows, right? So either way, getting another challenge you're going to face when you make this transition. Number one is make a good backup. The second one is, as a result of the slowness in iPhoto, I got to a point where I had broken it into pieces. And I know there's a lot of users that have done that. I had like the 2004 through 2010 as one library, which is great because back then the cameras were smaller and, you know, I had smaller images. And then after that, I think I had one library per year because, you know, the libraries of each year were the same size as all those prior libraries together. And so I have all these multiple libraries, and I have kind of the current library and I have the archive libraries. And that's one of the things I really was frustrated with iPhotos. I couldn't go to one place to see all my pictures. So when you set up Photos, it's going to create your default library when you first set it up. You know, it's going to take your existing iPhoto library and turn that into your new default library. Mm-hmm. Importing additional libraries is not obvious. You know, it's not obvious how to do that. And there's a couple of ways you can do it by, exporting the images out of iPhoto. Or what I did is I just opened up those prior iPhoto libraries as new instances of the Photos library.
Mm-hmm.
And then I exported them out and then re-imported them by just dragging them into the new library. And it seemed to me like that was kind of the best way to do it, given this is the new thing.
Because you want to merge them all back into one library?
There is no real way to merge. Yeah, currently. And there are already some tools showing up on the market. I think, frankly, this can get easier than the way I did it.
Right.
And I haven't had time to research them yet, but I've already been getting links in the email that, you know, people are working on stuff to merge them together. And that worked largely fine.
Does the Fat Cat Power Photos software now let you do merge? Or
I don't know.
You happen to know? Yeah. So Fat Cat, for people, I was going to ask you, you know, when you were breaking up your iPhoto library, did you use iPhoto Library Manager?
I think I did, but it wasn't that hard because once I made the decision, every year I just started a new one.
Right. Yeah. So you just held down the option key and
created
a new library. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of people have recommended, and I've used iPhoto Library Manager from Fat Cat, and they now have what they call Power Photos, which is the updated version for Photos, and it allows you to manage sort of multiple libraries and things like that, and it's been recommended to me quite a few times. I don't know if they have all the same functionality in the new version yet, because I think they're still working through the differences, you know, under the hood between iPhoto and Photos. But it's good for even doing things just like finding duplicates. I know it'll do that and sort of cleaning up your iPhoto library too. Would actually, to that end, do you recommend doing any sort of cleanup or sort of parsing through before the migration, or does that not really matter? Can you kind of get to that after?
As long as you've backed everything up, you can do it on either side. Yeah, and in my case, because iPhoto was such, you know, a slug, mm-hmm. the library cleanup was actually kind of difficult for me. And the new Photos, you know, the good news is once you get to the other side of this whole thing. And by the way, that screencast I did is 2.5 hours, but the first 30 minutes I'm giving away for free. And a lot of the first import library stuff is in that first half hour.
Oh, so, great. So people should check that out.
Just yeah. If you know, if you just want to figure that out, just go watch that part of the screencast. But once I got everything in there, a few things I discovered. Number one is, in my world at least, suddenly I was able to use the Photos app again. I mean, right. I was able to scroll through and see things quickly.
Faster,
and, yeah, it's just way faster. And we're going to talk later about the iCloud, you know,
right.
photo sharing, but because of the fact that now all this stuff is on all my devices, library cleanup has been easier than ever. In fact, now one of my pastimes is if we're going to sit on the couch and watch TV that I'm sort of but not that interested in, mm-hmm. I'm like opening up my iPad and just going through old libraries and, you know, cleaning them up, because it just, you know, it, now everything is everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I can delete, you know, extra pictures. I can, you know, crop and, you know, do basic edits to photos while I'm sitting there on my iPad, and I get back to my Mac, they're already done. Yeah. And my library is in better shape than ever. I mean, the other nice thing about the fact that it's so fast is I don't have to have multiple libraries. In fact, I had these silos of pictures all over the place. We took a big family vacation to Disney World last year, and I just did not have the heart to put them in iPhoto because I just knew what I was going to be getting into. So I had this folder that, you know, I had it in my Dropbox. And, you know, but, you know, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, I don't really have this managed very well. And right. So you just throw them at it. I mean, whatever you got, you throw out. We had a bunch of family archival pictures that I hadn't put in iPhoto, and I threw them at that. So it really just can take it, which is great. And so my library got even bigger when I was done with this process. And it's just really nice having, you know, everything in one place. Yeah.
So I think the last thing, sort of just in transitioning, I'm curious, and I'll tell you what I did after I hear your answer. But, I mean, do you think people... We talked about people who are maybe hesitant to make the switch. After making the switch, I know one thing that Apple does is they sort of, like we alluded to, they leave iPhoto there. Like, iPhoto doesn't get deleted. So now you have iPhoto and you have Photos. You already did point out the fact that if you're using one, you know, changes aren't going to sync between the two. They're really still separate edits and things like that. So you need to be aware of that. But it seemed to me almost like they were giving people a kind of safety net or a fail safe. It's like, well, I can always go back to iPhoto because it's still there. Do you think people should do that, or is it better, you know, just move forward, quit, switch cold turkey? And what did you do?
Well, I started it in the beta, so I was pretty nervous about, right. you know, just going cold turkey on anything with the beta. But as I got used to using Photos, and I just really prefer it over iPhoto a great deal. And that's okay. not only for the you know, the slowness problem I was having with iPhoto. I think the edit tools are better, and, you know, then, you know, the iCloud stuff. There's just a lot of reasons to like this new order of photo management better.
Yeah, I like it a lot too. My response is I went cold turkey. I mean, I backed up my iPhoto library, of course, so I could, you know, figured I could always reinstall and go back if I needed to. But I mean, I did the migration, made sure all my photos moved over, and then deleted iPhoto.
Like, yeah, that's what I did
immediately.
Too. Well, yeah. I didn't do it immediately, but it is gone now. So,
yeah. Okay, cool. So, you know, now that people have transitioned, or when you transition, let's talk a little bit about maybe just some of the differences. And I think one that a lot of people struggle with, and I'm curious if you struggled with this right off the bat, is just the UI change of, you know, Apple sort of switching to the one window kind of interface.
Yeah, I was, and if you use an iPhone or an iPad, the new interface is going to be very familiar. You know,
right,
it's the years, the moments. And when I first saw they were doing that, they announced at WWDC last year and they had a preview.
Right.
I was thinking, you know, that's a great interface for the iPad and the iPhone. I'm not sure that's the perfect interface for the Mac. But I understand they're doing it for purposes of uniform experience. You know, I mean, they want users to feel like they know it wherever they're at. And then I started using it. And you know what? It's really not that bad. I mean,
I like it.
You know, actually. You pinch, you can use the pinch to zoom, you know, you can pinch on your trackpad to move backwards or tap in to go, or you can use the arrow keys. You can scroll up and down. And my library goes back to roughly 2002. And I can go back there so quickly and find things. And it's pretty easy. Like I was saying, well, we went to Hawaii in 2007 and then I wanted to see those pictures, and I knew there was, you know, you just look at the block of 2007 photos and you see there's some blue in the middle, about the middle, and you're like, well, there's Hawaii. So I tap on that and you're in there in no time at all. Before I had a very labor-intensive method for putting events together, you know, and, you know, creating little events and manually going through and doing all this stuff, and I'm finding I don't really need that anymore. It's if I want to go find something, I can find it pretty easily through these views. So I was initially skeptical and now I'm a believer. I think it makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, they did the same thing with iTunes essentially, right? We got rid of the sidebar. And
you can't put the sidebar in though if you want. They do have that ability.
Well, again, what do you think though about this? Because I've pointed that out to people as well. I mean, we covered that in the hints and tips. Because immediately, that's a jarring, sort of shocking thing for a lot of people. And I kind of get. I mean, I get that. I understand that. But I've always sort of, you know, years ago, I used to fight this. I guess is what I'm going to say. I used to fight the Apple philosophy of move forward, never look back. But you know, Apple is always looking forward. They don't really look back. And so once I sort of embraced like, okay, this is the new way. And that was sort of my genesis for saying, you know what, I'm going to migrate and I'm going to get rid of iPhoto. I'm not going to leave it there so that I'm not tempted to go back to that old paradigm. And I sort of took the same tact with the sidebar and both in iTunes and in Photos. And I think it was a little painful at first, but it didn't last very long. It's sort of like ripping the Band-Aid off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. And it's nice. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I don't think I need it. The new paradigm is structured in a way you don't, but it's there if you want it. And I think generally when Apple makes transitions like this as users, they may accommodate you in this release and maybe even the next release, but eventually that's not going to be there, would be my guess. So you might as well start getting used to it now.
So you already alluded to one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about, because probably if I were to guess what the hardest thing that I've heard from people in transitioning is the loss of events.
Yeah.
You know, this concept that iPhoto introduced of these events and the ability to sort of merge events and things like that. What's your take on that?
Well, just as I was saying earlier, I was a big event user before, and I'm actually okay with it. I probably sound like a fanboy, but I do like the idea. When I look back at the amount of time I spent creating events versus the amount of time I spent accessing them, it's like tagging or anything else on your computer.
Right.
There's a cost benefit analysis, right? You know, how much time is it going to take for you to manage this widget, and what does this widget save you in time later? You know, how is it useful to you? And you know, looking back, I'd never really questioned that part of what I do, but now looking back, I have not accessed events nearly as much as I've spent, you know, laboring over creating them.
Yeah.
And now I'm okay with it. I mean, but one of my things I bang on about with photos is that it, you know, in this age of digital photography, it is really easy to go to, you know, a family barbecue and shoot 300 pictures. Mm-hmm. And it's even easier just to leave those in your library. But before long, your library becomes completely unmanageable. I've always been a fan of saying, hey, you know, if you like taking pictures, go nuts, take 300 pictures. But, you know, also be brutal when you look at those pictures and delete, you know, 90% of them. You know, go through and pick the good ones, because as you get old and gray, you're not going to want to see 300 pictures from the day. You're going to want to see really probably the two or three pictures from that day. And, you know, just take the really good ones and move on. And I know that, you know, it's easy to keep them all. And, you know, somebody wrote, I made this speech once and some guy wrote me and said, oh, yeah, but the guy who did the Monica Lewinsky picture got rich because he kept them all. I'm like, yeah, but that's not me. And, right. So, keeping a smaller library just makes it so much easier. It just solves so many. I think you're better off culling the herd than spending time trying to manage the herd.
Yeah, I need to probably take that advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for somebody, probably what I would do if I were to take that path, and I probably should, is create an album, you know, that would be called, I don't know, I'd probably call it like something like Shoebox, right?
Yeah.
And cull through my library and take all those images, like you said, that aren't the really great images, and throw them into that Shoebox album. And then I'd probably take that one and just export it to an archive, you know, and then throw that onto my backup hard drive, onto my Drobo, and you know, stick it in the cloud somewhere and probably be done with it. You know, and then just delete all those out. So
I'm even more brutal. I would just say just delete them.
You throw them away. Yeah. I don't know if I could. I'd want to have that sort of.
Yeah.
But, you know, at least they'd be gone out of my core library and I wouldn't have to worry about them anymore. It's sort of like, you know, sticking them in a shoebox and shoving them in the closet. And,
yeah.
You know, they're there if you ever need them. And you're probably never going to go open that box, but it may fit in with my. If you walked into my garage, I have stuff in there that probably should just be tossed, but.
Are you a hoarder, Adam?
I'm not a super hoarder. My wife is more than I am, honestly. I'm pretty good about deleting stuff, but I don't know.
Photos
are a tough thing.
My wife likes to keep stuff too. And it's like, it's funny because
your kids are, you know.
Oh yeah. It's tough, but you know, it's funny how I feel like it's like somebody, I'm just the opposite. I like to like get rid of stuff.
Yeah.
My wife likes to keep stuff. I don't think there's any like marriage where both spouses are on the same side of that fence. It's always one or the other.
Anyway, regardless, I think that's really good advice. And I, you know, probably more people need to cull the herd in their photo library. Sticking back on one more thing on the events thing, because I'm just kind of curious. So when you do the import, and we've discussed this on the show before too, you know, it does take all of your old events from iPhoto and sort of create albums from those.
Yeah.
Automatically. What did you do with those?
Do you really want to know?
Yeah, I do. I do. Okay. Because actually, many people have asked about this, and I've had people take sort of different tacks. So I'm curious what you did.
Given my personality that I just shared,
right.
Once I figured out that I could navigate faster and easier without the events,
mm-hmm.
I pressed the delete button.
And me just, too.
Just got rid of them all.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I mean, I already had some albums that I had already separated out that weren't specifically related to events. That was just more organizational stuff. But yeah. I mean, because honestly, I looked at that events album too, and a lot of them I had never even gone through. Because I think one of the dilemmas, and I'm guessing this is why Apple decided they really didn't need the feature anymore, is I think a majority of the people, it auto-creates those events, and it just sort of throws a date on that. So when I was looking at that events album, it was mostly just these random dates.
Yeah.
Right. And then I was looking at the moments and collections and stuff like that going, this is basically the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. It's, you know, these things organized by the day I took the photos, because, you know, and events did have that sort of thing where it would kind of recognize if you had taken a grouping and then sort of stopped and then taken another grouping, it would kind of divide those into two different things. And sometimes you'd have to merge them back together because it was really all on the same day or at the same event. But I think they discovered that a lot of people weren't going back through and actually, again, doing that, like you were talking about, it takes effort to go back and do the tagging and sort of actually say what that is. And for things that I really cared about, I already kind of had albums that were already set up for that. So I did exactly the same thing. But I know a lot of people who will just take all of, because it throws them in a folder called events under your albums. I know some people who took the tact of they wanted those events, but they at least moved them up one level. So sort of just select them all and then throw them into the albums. So they just become albums, which is sort of, you know, what Apple is saying the replacement for events is. Like, just take your collection here for that day and just make an album from it and then, you know, move on with your life. At least that's how I kind of feel about it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, that's kind of the direction Apple's going with this stuff. But mm-hmm. But, you know, you can, if you're big into events, I don't want to tell people to change their system if their system works for them. But I do think that the newer system is a lot less fiddly and just as useful. And in my case, it's more useful because I'm willing to pay to have the iCloud sync, which is kind of remarkable.
Yeah. One other thing, on the last thing I want to ask you about on the new sort of UI and layout and stuff like that is something that I've actually struggled with a little bit. How do you feel about navigation in Photos and just sort of getting around from one place to another?
Okay, so are you talking like in the Photos view or
just in the app in general? I mean, specifically, what I'm calling sort of the, and Apple's done this with a lot of their one windowed apps. They sort of take what I call almost the browser approach.
Yeah,
which is that back button becomes your, and this is the tip that I've given people who are transitioning. I'm like, that back button is your friend when you're moving around the, you know, the little arrows up in the menu bar. That's your friend when you're trying to get around Photos. And, you know, when you had the three panel interface with the sidebar, that wasn't really how you navigated. So I've had a little bit of a tough time transitioning there.
I think I've lost that beginner's mind on this because I spent a lot of time working in Photos, you know, getting the library and doing the, you know, the screencast. So
right.
To me, it's very natural now, and I'd have to like go back. But my advice would be, you're right, it is kind of like a browser. I mean, there's buttons on the top of the screen, and there aren't many. You know, yeah. There's the Photos button, which is all your photos, and that's the one where you navigate it the way we were talking about earlier. Getting like drilling back to the years is a good way to kind of find your way around.
Right.
The shared button is a different set of tools, and it's for sharing. And by the way, I don't want to get off on a tangent too much, but shared libraries are so great. You know, and it solves one of the problems which we may talk about in a minute. And then the albums view is kind of like my, you know, the old site type of events type things where you can have specific albums generated and they all navigate the same way. You have the back button to get you back to the root section of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I spend most of my time in the Photos button, the far left, working through. I do edits in there and I do library maintenance in there. And then when I create albums, it's usually for a specific purpose. Like I'm working on another field guide right now, and I've got a bunch of pictures, and I've got an album created for that. So that's kind of more of a destination than a working location.
Huh.
So, you know, my advice is, you know, take some time kind of getting your head around that. But it is different, and it will take a little bit of adjustment.
Do you one other thing, I guess I lied now because then I'm curious about one other thing. Do you use Smart Albums at all?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. They don't sync to the iOS devices, which is a bummer.
Right.
But like it's really nice. I mean, I you know, one thing people don't realize is you don't have to create a Smart Album forever. You know, I talked about this a little bit in the screencast. We had a birthday party recently for one of my relatives, and we wanted to have different pictures of her over the years, and I put together a Smart Album, you know, with her and, you know, different, you know, criteria, but her being part of it.
Right.
And it was great. And I got a bunch of pictures that I wouldn't have found, or I wouldn't have found as quickly. And then from there, once we were done, we got the pictures printed, I deleted the Smart Album. I mean, why not? You know, so yeah, there's a use for it. And then they've got these interesting kind of built-in Smart Albums that ship inside it with, like, give me all my panorama, my pictures, or all my videos.
Yeah, those are nice.
And that's cool.
Yeah, that's great. All right, so let's move on to, I want to talk a little bit about editing.
Yeah.
Because I think that's one feature that is really improved in Photos.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what they did was, you know, back in iPhoto, you had a lot of sliders and ability to edit a photo. What you didn't have, at least me, was the knowledge of how to use those responsibly. You know, right. It's like if you hand your Mac Pro to a 3-year-old, they are definitely going to push some buttons and make some things happen, but they don't really know exactly what they're doing. And that was me in iPhoto. and the thing they've done, which I thought was pretty smart, was they said, okay, we're going to look for like user goals more than specific settings. So I'll have a picture and say, I want this brighter. And there's a brightness slider, or I think they call it light. And you turn up the light slider, and then a whole bunch of stuff happens. It's not just turning up exposure. It's adjusting exposure and shadows and a whole bunch of other things in the image. And some things go up and some things go down and some things stay the same. So right. It's like it's managing multiple sliders at once with the overall goal of adding light to the picture without wrecking the picture at the same time.
Right.
And they've done
that little visual indicator of the slider too, which I really like.
Yeah. And so, you know, you've got basically the benefit. The computer now is bringing a photo expert to you. So you can make the changes yourself, but you're getting the advantage of, you know, a lot more knowledge involved about how to make adjustments to that photo, which I think is really great. There's additional adjustment tools a lot of people don't realize are there. If you go and you click on it, you can add additional things. But just the big three that it comes with is contrast or color, light, and black and white. And that's good enough for a lot of stuff. I mean, the crop and rotation tools are, I think, easier to use than they were in iPhoto. And it's got the, you know, the Instagramification of photos everywhere. It's got filters. So, of course, they've got filters. So you put them and then you can take your picture you took with your 2015 fancy camera and make it look like it was taken with your crappy, you know, 1977.
My only complaint on the filters is one thing that seems to have been lost from iPhoto is you used to be able to apply a filter effect sort of multiple times or multiple filters.
Yeah.
And now it's just sort of one you either get on or off. It's kind of more of a toggle. And I don't know, you know, I'm not going to make any judgments on that, whether it's good or bad, but it was kind of neat before that you could kind of play around and sort of merge filters and almost kind of create your own. But I mean, that's a minor nitpick, really. Yeah.
You can do, though, is you can apply a filter and then edit from there,
right?
Which is nice. But the but you're right. You cannot apply them multiple times. But you know, so they've got good editing tools. And frankly, like I said, I place the editing tool somewhere between Aperture and iPhoto. I mean, Aperture had localized editing, so you could say, you know, that picture of Adam in the lower right corner, his face is really dark. I just want to lighten up his face.
Sure.
And you can't do that in Photos, but you could have done it in Aperture. But just for the general fixes, and you know, I guess the overall philosophy of this we could talk about, but I think Apple was squarely aiming at normal people and not professional photographers with this software. And for the things normal people do, you know, crop, brighten up, darken, you know, change to black and white or whatever. And for the normal tools, it's really loaded for bear, and it's on the iPad, the iPhone, and the Mac, so you can do those edits anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Just my thing on the editing that I really like is you mentioned you sort of have all those basic controls, right? But then you have that add button, which you alluded to as well, where you can pull down and you can add in additional things beyond those first three. So they have a histogram, they have sharpening, they have noise reduction, vignetting, white balancing and things like that. But not only can you add those, then within each one of those, yes, you have the sort of universal slider that takes the thinking out of it. But if you really are that type of person that you want granular control, say over, you know, the cast in your color or the saturation, or if you want to only look at the highlights or the shadows in terms of adjusting light, you can expand those things open. And then there's individual sliders for each one of those things. So you can really go as deep or not as deep as you want, which I think is a huge improvement over. I mean, we had some of that in iPhoto, but this just sort of takes it to the whole next level.
Yeah, I agree. It's great. You know, it moves the ball forward, and you know, it just photo management was such a problem up until recently.
Right. Trying to think. So that kind of covers editing. I don't know if there's any other thing really on editing. We probably should finish up talking about the cloud storage, because I think that's another big new feature in here that a lot of people are trying to figure out. You know, iCloud Photo Library. Is that something I should turn on? Is that something I shouldn't turn on?
Yeah, it takes a little bit to wrap your head around that as well. So Apple, the big issue, I mean, iPhoto had some issues. And frankly, I think iPhoto could have had a lot of these additions made to it. I mean, they could have made the better editing and better, you know, speedier library if they had devoted the engineering resources to iPhoto. I think the reason Photos exists is not because they wanted to make iPhoto a better photo management and adjustment application. It exists because they wanted to get your photos everywhere, and they wanted, they wanted to kind of make the experience universal through their products, and they wanted to have the iCloud storage stuff built in. And for that, they decided to go elsewhere and, you know, create this new app. And the reason iPhoto became such a slug was because probably all the people that were would have been working on iPhoto were working on this app. So
probably,
you know, it's this cloud storage is a big deal. And you know, I talk a bit about this in the video. I mean, when you first got a camera, before there were computers, photo management was really easy. You took a picture, and you know, and it was remarkably expensive, and you didn't know if they were going to be any good. But you know, eventually you went to Thrifty or whatever and got your pictures developed, and then you put them in a shoebox or a photo album, and that was your photo management. And there, it wasn't hard.
I never looked at them again, pretty much.
It was inferior in a lot of ways and superior in other ways. But the fact is, it wasn't hard. And then when the Mac came out, you know, this idea of the Mac as your digital hub. Again, photo management wasn't that hard, and these are the early days of iPhoto, because you only had one thing that could take digital pictures. You know, it was a digital camera, and you only had one place to put them, which was your computer. And so, once again, you had a virtual shoebox, and you had your camera. But then over the last 7-8 years, now all of a sudden we have phones that take pictures and iPads that take pictures and cameras, maybe multiple cameras and GoPros. And then so the input side is infinitely more complicated, and the output side is more complicated, because we want to view them on all those devices too. Right. And that's where iPhoto, I think, just ran out of gas. And they said, okay, we got to start over again. And the digital hub, and this is no secret, Apple's been talking about this for years, is now we want to put it in the cloud. And Photos was the next thing that had to get that treatment. So what Photos does is once you set it up in a method that's not entirely transparent, it starts uploading your pictures to this Apple Cloud.
This is when you go into System Preferences into the iCloud tab and click on that iCloud Photo Library checkbox.
And it takes, depending on how big your library is, it took me 2.5 days to get that done. But once it's done, all of your images appear on all of your devices, and it feels kind of magical to me. You know, I can, like I said, I've been teasing throughout the show. I can open my phone or my iPad or my Mac or my laptop. I've got two Macs, and I can see everything.
Yeah. Did it get wonky for you? One sort of scary thing when I ticked that box on, because it does take, you know, for me, I think it took about 3 days for everything to get up there. There were two things that frustrated me about that experience a little bit. One, you sort of have, if you go back into the iCloud tab in the preferences, you kind of get this little blue bar, and it sort of says what it's doing. It's like, I'm updating, you know, 10 photos or something like that. But the bar didn't really move all that much, and it wasn't, there were several times when I thought, oh man, this thing's stalled out. And compounding that was, I would go over to my iOS device, and like, some things would be there and some things wouldn't be there. And it was like a hairy 3 days of like, is everything going to get up there? Is it all going to be there? And I guess my advice would be to someone, you know, sort of do this at a time when you're not going to be wanting to mess with your libraries too much. Turn it on and wait for it. Because once it completely finished, once everything was there, it's been working great. It's flawless. But sort of in that transition period where it was doing its stuff in the background, my libraries were a mess.
Yeah, you gotta just like trust the system for a few days.
A little scary. Did you have a similar experience?
Yeah, not only that, I've transitioned all in my library. I've transitioned all my wife and kids' libraries as well. And when you do it, like, you'll notice that it says, you know, 20,000 pictures left, and then you'll come back 4 hours later, and it'll have the exact same number.
Right.
And then if you close the dialog and reopen, it'll say 15,000 pictures left. And it's like, it's not updating itself properly. So there's all kinds of weird bits going on. And I think they could have done that better. But the point is, at the end of the process, and frankly, feel free to take pictures on your phone at things during that period. But don't try and manage library or start, you know, fiddling inside Photos. Just let the system do its thing. And you're good. And there's a couple settings that you should be aware of there. You can have the ability to save all of the pictures onto your Mac which I think is important. I mean, if at all possible, because that gives you a backup platform. You know, when, you know, we've been talking about backup. Once you've got all the photos on one computer, you can super duper, you can, you know, time capsule, whatever is your backup of choice. You've got that ability. The other option,
the download originals to this Mac option.
Yeah. And the other option is to leave them in iCloud. And so, for instance, I have a laptop with a tiny hard drive and I have a big honkin' iMac, and the iMac gets everything. And the laptop, I'm fine leaving them in the cloud for that because I know I've got them in one location on my Mac.
Yeah, I'm the same way. So my MacBook Pro, my 15-inch MacBook Pro, which is my main machine, is the originals, download the originals. And then I have a MacBook Air, you know, that doesn't have that kind of storage. So that's the optimized Mac storage where it keeps the full resolution photos and videos in iCloud and only pulls down the stuff that you're going to work on. So it kind of optimizes the storage space. And I mean, you have the same similar options on iOS, and for sure, every one of my iOS devices is optimized.
You have to have very few pictures to keep the originals.
Yeah, exactly. So that kind of brings up the other point is storage, right? You're going to, most people, unless they have a tiny iCloud library, right, they're going to have to up their storage payment for iCloud, because 5 gigs is not going to probably store most people's photo libraries, I don't think.
It is, and that is one of the big complaints, frankly. So they're like, look, I want to do all this stuff. I've got this library. I want to get this treatment, but you know, I don't want to pay for it. And that's going to be a problem. They give you 20 gigabytes for $1 a month, 200 gigabytes for $4 a month, 500 gigabytes for 10, and 1 terabyte for 20.
Right.
For me, the 200 gigabytes here, $4 a month is sufficient for my library. And frankly, if you take my advice about culling the herd, it should be okay for you too.
Right.
So is it worth $4 a month, you know, or was it $48 a year to have this feature turned on? And that's a decision you're going to make for yourself. And I think we can talk later in the show. There's other services out there that are cheaper. Apple is not the cheapest.
Yeah, we'll hit on a couple of those. Apple is not the cheapest.
Yeah, Apple is not the cheapest to do all the storage for you. But to me, it's worth it because everything just works so well.
Yep.
The applications are great, and because I'm an Apple guy, I use Apple hardware for mobile and for laptops. If it costs me an extra couple dollars a month, but everything just works and is everywhere, I think it's a good investment. So, but everybody's going to make their own decision on that stuff. But yeah, you will end up paying for it. But just like, I don't know, I'm still in the honeymoon phase with this stuff. I love having all my pictures. We went to a family party recently. And all I had was my phone with me. And my sister and I were reminiscing about something that had happened in 2007. And I pulled up my phone and showed her pictures from that day. And we were just having such a great time.
Yeah.
And she says, well, how did you know to put that on your phone? And I'm like, well, let me talk to you about photos, you know, because everything is on my phone now, which is amazing, you know, and I don't know. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Granted, you can do it other ways that are cheaper, and we will talk about it. But having those editing tools, that accessibility, and, you know, the photos library is accessible through most applications, so you can just get to your photos real quickly. You know, the only downside, and I've heard about this from listeners and readers and experienced myself, is, you know, as you get larger libraries, sometimes opening the photo picker in iOS takes a little bit longer than it used to.
Yeah, I would imagine that. So obviously that experience with bringing up those older photos wouldn't work for this. But, you know, another sort of tip I've kind of given people if they really don't want to have to pay more for the storage is photos will only iCloud Photo Library sync your with what Apple's calling your system library or your main library. So if you do go through and break your photos library up into multiple libraries, you could just have one small library that's the library that you set up for iCloud photo sharing. You know,
that's a good idea.
Yeah, you're going to lose the advantage of having access to all your entire library, but at least you could take advantage of some of the benefits maybe and pay less for storage or get by with just the 5 gigabytes, depending upon, you know, what you're doing with iCloud.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is there more stuff? I don't know that there's much more to talk about on PhotoStream. Oh, I know one thing that I want to ask you about. And I just encountered this recently. So if you don't use iCloud Photo Library, you still have the PhotoStream and you still have iCloud Photo Sharing. And you hinted at iCloud Photo Sharing a little bit more, or a little bit earlier, I think iCloud photo sharing is a great feature, regardless of whether you use iCloud Photo Library or PhotoStream.
Agreed. And one of the complaints about photos is library sharing. They're saying, right. You know, it's like, hey, this is great. You guys finally solved this cloud storage problem. But my wife has a photo library and I have a photo library and we want to be able to access each other's full libraries. How come it doesn't do that?
Right.
And it doesn't. I mean, the answer is it just doesn't. I think in my case, I don't really want to access my wife's full library because she takes a bunch of pictures of crafting stuff and things I'm not interested in. I mean, there's a reason why we have two libraries to begin with.
Right.
But if that's the case, the only way to fix that is to literally duplicate each other's libraries and then, you know, just load, and which is not really going to fix it because, as you know, point going forward, it's not going to fix it either. I'm a much bigger fan of these shared iCloud libraries. And you know, getting back to like family events, if we all go to the park or have a barbecue together, quite often I will open an event that does, it says, you know, May 2015 barbecue. And I'll just share it with everybody in the family. And, you know, there's a lot of people in my family that use Apple devices, surprise, surprise.
Right.
You know? and they will add pictures as well as I. And I'm not going to get every picture they take. But, you know, everybody kind of has a filter, right? And if you're going to put something in the shared library, you're going to only put the ones that you really like in there.
Yeah, so that you think are the best. So you're getting the advantage of someone else doing the culling.
Yeah, and I started doing this years ago, and I even had like a naming like convention for it and everything, but the naming convention got all blown all to heck because my family likes it so much that they all do it. So now half the time, or even more than half the time, I'm not the one who starts the shared library because I'll show up and my sister will already have it done and pictures of the turkey going in the oven. You know, it's just everybody's doing it now because we all like these shared libraries. So to my mind, that is a sufficient solution for the hey share, I want my shared library problem. Right. But if you want a full-on shared library, there really isn't a solution for that yet.
Right. And iCloud photo sharing still has the option too. I know people have said, well, what if I have people who are on Android or who are on Windows devices? They used to have some cross-platform options, but you always have the option, you know, if you don't mind making your pictures sort of privately public, of setting up the public website.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where it gives you this cryptic URL. They're not totally private, and I want to be clear about that. You know, if someone could figure out that URL, they could probably stumble across your photos. But that still is an option there, and I've used that from time to time as well to share with people who are on other platforms.
Yeah.
So the last thing on the iCloud stuff that I'm curious to get your take on, because I just did this recently. So once you've enabled iCloud Photo Library, right, all of your photos are going to be syncing into the iCloud. I, for a long time, had the photo stream still going. You know, and that was the thing where if you take a photo with your phone or your iOS device, right, it's going to automatically go. Or if you import photos into iPhoto and you have it turned on, it's all automatically going to go into this sort of 1,000 photo stream that doesn't count against your iCloud library or your iCloud storage. I realized just like this week that once you've turned on iCloud Photo Library, that's a little redundant, I think.
Hey, you should watch my video, Adam. Yeah, I talk about that. You don't need it.
I think
anymore.
I missed that part.
Once you get it going, you know, you're fine. Just turn that off. That's just extra noise.
Yeah. I finally figured that out on my own. I don't know how I missed that.
That was always kind of very difficult to discern what all that meant anyway. I think that solution that, you know, the photo stream, it was a temporary fix always. And I'm glad to be shot of it.
Right. All right. So I think the last thing we need to hit just to do our due diligence is maybe some of these alternatives. And it's interesting that all these alternatives seem to be just starting to kick up now. I don't think it's directly related to Apple releasing iCloud Photo Library, but the timing's really interesting. It's specifically Google. Google just had Google I/O, and they announced Google Photos, which is going to allow you to kind of have your photo library. And they're getting pretty aggressive on sort of marketing free or cheaper options, I think, than what Apple is offering. But there's caveats, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, Google is a cloud services company, so it makes sense.
Right.
But the so they've got Google Photos now, where you can upload an unlimited number of pictures for free, so long as you let them downscale them to a size. I don't have the exact size in front of me. In fact, they don't really even tell you.
I was trying to figure that out. They just say they optimize them.
It makes great quality.
It'll be great quality at an optimized file size. That's all they give you.
I was just telling you before we recorded, I set this up last night and started an initial upload because I wanted to test it. And I quickly gobbled up all of my Google Drive space. They sent me a very nice email asking me to pay them $2 or $10 a month to continue. So I pushed the wrong button and I didn't have it downscale the images. So I'm going to have to fix that. But the so Google's got a method. If you're willing to allow them to adjust the image size to something that is acceptable to them, then you can put in an unlimited number of photos up there and not pay $4 a month like I'm paying to Apple.
Right.
The other downside of that in my mind for Apple people is you don't have it everywhere in operating system integrated like we do with the photo stuff.
Right.
And you don't have those cool photos tools, although I know Google has Picasa and its own sets of tools, and there's other applications out there you can do the image adjustments in. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's I think it's less convenient, but it's a lot cheaper. And that's something to look at.
How is the? Do they have an app on iOS that then you access your photos through? And how is that app? Have you messed with that yet?
This is all so new that I haven't.
Right, it's literally just as of yesterday, so I'm kind of putting you on the spot. But you did. I'm assuming there is an uploader then that you're using on your Mac. How is there?
It's even easier than that. If you've got a you got to use Chrome. You can't use Safari. You just go to your drive, you know, your Google Drive, and go to your Google Photos folder and literally just drag and drop images in there. And I did it with folders, and it kept the folder structures. Like, you know, I talked earlier.
Did you have to export from the Photos library, or could you just drop the Photos library on?
Well, I don't think you could put the Photos library on. I think that would cause problems. But right. As I was saying at the beginning of the show, I have frantic backup issues. So one of the things I do is I just happen to have all this extra Dropbox space. I pay for a Dropbox account. I'm not sure if I'm going to keep it or not, but for now I've got it. And since I've got a terabyte of Dropbox space and I have a transporter, so I've got two different kind of offsite backup things.
Right.
Whenever I finish, like every couple months, I export the last couple months, you know, images into folders and add them to this pile of PDFs. I'm sorry, JPEGs. So
gotcha.
I've got this kind of historical JPEG folder that I back up offsite a couple different places. And if suddenly photos went up in flames, I'd still have all my pictures. So I just went to those backups and drug in those folders. And no problem at all, except for the fact that I smashed into my Google Drive space. And now I'm trying to figure out if I have to re-upload them or if it will go back and lower the scale.
Balance it out for you.
I hope so, because I do have a lot of, you know, stuff in Google Drive with, you know, Google Docs, and I don't want to be out of space. So
probably pretty important. I was telling you earlier, and I haven't talked about this on the MacCast yet, I found out about Flickr. So I covered some tips and tricks when I did the migration to iCloud Photo Library. And a couple of my audience members said, hey, you should check out Flickr because Flickr's new app is really good. And they're giving you 1 terabyte of free photo storage. I've since found out, you know, again, free is not necessarily always free. Flickr used to have what's called a Flickr Pro account. I don't know if you ever had a Flickr Pro account.
Yeah.
So I have a Pro account, and as long as you keep on auto-renew for the Pro account, you get the Pro account benefits, which means I actually on Flickr have unlimited photo storage as long as I keep my renewal going. The minute I cancel it, they've canceled that program, and so now what they have is they have the free account, which gives you 1 terabyte of storage, but what you get along with that is, I guess, within their app and within their website, you will see ads. So it's an ad-supported model. You can pay $50 a year to go ad-free and have those ads removed. So that's sort of how they're monetizing that thing. And I just read an article over on iMore that was kind of digging into the Flickr terms of service. And one thing people might be concerned about, it sounds like they do some image analysis, and there's a good and bad side of that. The good side of that is they actually do some auto-tagging. And I think Google said they're doing a similar kind of thing, whereas they will go through and they will look at your images and sort of auto tag them. Flickr calls it like magic view. So once my photos started uploading, I could go into this magic view view of my photo library, or my camera roll, as they call it, and it was auto-categorizing my photos. So there was a category called animals. And then with animals, it had birds, insects, dog, cat, and other. And I could click on any one of those, and automatically I would see all the pictures of my dog or my cat or from the zoo. You know, there were like flamingos. And it would even get as deep as, I mean, individually tagging birds. So I could do a Google search for flamingos, and all the flamingo photos from my photo library started showing up on Flickr. And that works on the iOS app as well as within Flickr. It's pretty cool and pretty accurate.
Nice.
And they do it even for things like landscapes. And then they have landscapes divided into like forest, shore, sunset. You know, so they're doing this in-image analysis with computers and sort of helping you categorize your photos. Because, you know, tagging can be very helpful for searching, but no one does it. I mean, who has the time to go through and tag all those photos, right? Yeah. So the idea here is that they're going to help you with that. The downside in their terms of service is it sounds like they may use some of that image analysis to help target those ads in the ad-supported model. So, you know, if they see you have beach vacation photos, they're probably going to try and sell you ads for beach vacations, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
You know, they haven't outright said that they're going to do that. But so that's the trade-off. But you do get a free terabyte of storage. So, I mean, you're willing to kind of let them do that. I don't think they're going to sell that information directly, and I think it's anonymized, but, you know, take it for what it's worth. I mean, that's the trade-off. So I think we were talking about earlier, in a lot of ways, I'd prefer just to pay Apple, you know, $4 a month and just know all of my stuff is private. But one thing I'm hoping Apple will steal from Google and Flickr is this, you know, analyze the image and auto-tag for, like, searching.
Yeah.
Would be awesome.
Yeah, and I think Apple's pricing will come down. They're just always behind. It's last year at WWDC, when Apple announced the pricing that I explained earlier, that was essentially the same pricing that Dropbox had at the time. And then, like, within a month or so, Dropbox, like, cut all its pricing in half. It used to be $20 a month for a terabyte in Dropbox, and now it's 10. So, you know, I suspect Apple is watching this stuff. They're not going to want to lose. They don't want to lose too many users.
Yeah. Well, but, yeah, the other big leg up they have is the integration, right? Because Flickr, while it has this great uploader on the Mac and you can turn, you know, the feature on your iOS devices where everything you take with your camera automatically gets uploaded. With the Flickr uploader, it's great. You can define individual folders on your Mac as well as individual locations. So it can say, hey, we can watch your downloads folder. We can watch your pictures folder if you want. And you can turn all those on and off selectively. And it will also just do your iPhoto or your photos library. So it can go through and I have that turned on. So now I can continue to use photos. Anything I add new to photos is automatically going to get uploaded into the Flickr service. And it does all get uploaded in private mode for Flickr. So it's all going into just, you know, viewable only by you and your account. And then you have to go in and implicitly say, okay, I want to share this with friends or public or something like that. So I thought that was kind of a nice feature as well. But the disadvantage is you don't get the syncing. So even though I can go see those photos on my iOS device and I can make edits on those iOS devices because they do have editing tools through Aviary in the Flickr application, those edits are only going to sync to Flickr. They're not syncing back into my photo library, right? So Apple's big advantage is, like you were saying, I can sit down with my iPad, I can do my culling and my organizing and editing and know that it's going to show up all on my Mac. And so you are going to lose that if you're using a third-party service.
And Apple, you know, Apple makes a big deal about the fact that, you know, they're not in the business of selling data and, you know, selling ads. They make their money selling you computers and iPads and iPhones. So it's the one company in this mix that has no interest and using your photos for something else. And
that's probably why their storage is a little bit more expensive too, right? Yeah. They don't get to offset the cost by selling ads on your metadata.
And I understand. Every time I have this discussion with somebody on a podcast, someone emails me and says, well, you know, Google's fine. They don't do bad things. And you're probably right. But I do think, at least as a user, you should be aware of that.
Right. You got to make the choice. You know, and that's why I'm pointing the thing out with Flickr too. I mean, those terms of service do have some things in there. And you got to pay close attention because, you know, you might get bit in a way that you weren't expecting. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. I think that about covers it. And if it didn't, you've got this video guide, right?
Yeah.
Two and a half hours of video, yeah. You said?
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
That's great. A lot of people really like, you know, that's the way they like to learn. So tell people about the new video guide.
So I do, I write books, but I also do video field guides on occasion. And the video field guides I do, it just depends on what I'm talking about. And for photos, I felt like people didn't want to read a book about it as much as they wanted just to see how it all works. So I made a video and I explained photos, and it's soup to nuts. I mean, it covers importing, backing up, editing, you know, all the bells and whistles, every feature is covered. And it covers it on the Mac, the iPad, and the iPhone. So I said, well, I'll make it as long as I need to make it to cover all that stuff. And I thought it'd be like an hour and a half. It ended up being 2.5 hours. But it's tight video. I spent a lot of time making it, so I don't waste a lot of your time. And it's $10. You can get it over at MacSparky.com and just click on it there. And you get the whole video. It's not DRM'd or anything. So just if you buy it, you download it to your Mac, and then you can install it in iTunes or put it on your iPad, watch it on your Mac, do whatever. I like to make it easier for my customers. And it's a good walkthrough for photos. So if you are getting into photos, or if you just want to feel like you want to get a little better at it, you know, pour yourself, you know, a cup of your favorite beverage, sit back and let me show you.
Yeah, it's awesome. So in addition to that, I mean, you have other field guides people can check out. I'm a fan of all of them.
Thanks,
so
Adam.
People should do that. MacSparky.com, is that the best place for people to go for that?
Yeah. Yeah. Just go to MacSparky.com. It's all in the right margin. They're all listed there.
Perfect. And then you also do a podcast and stuff. And so
yeah,
you want
to
tell people about the podcast and then just where to find you online if they want to follow you a little bit.
Sure.
More.
Katie Floyd and I do this podcast together called The Mac Power Users. And we love it. It's a show about getting good at using technology and focused on Mac and iPad and iOS and phone. And we do one a week, and it's a lot of fun. You can check it out. We're over on relay.fm/MPU or MacPowerUsers.com. And just to find me in general, go to MacSparky.com. There's links there for everything, including the podcast.
All the social media and stuff like that. Well, great. Thanks, Dave. I really appreciate you taking the time, because I think, you know, this is a big, big topic, and a lot of people are still sort of finding their way through it. So both your field guide and your discussion with us, I think, is really going to help out.
You know, I think, you know, and overall, as Apple enthusiasts, I think we should all be really happy with photos. I mean, Apple, I knew that they would make a better app at managing photos, because iPhoto, I felt like, was being kind of left in the lurch. And I knew those people were working on something. But, you know, one of the big complaints about Apple, justifiably over the last several years, has been they can't seem to figure out cloud storage, you know, and everything they did that was cloud-based always had a rough launch, and it just always seemed like it was kind of more difficult than if you used a similar service from Google. And so they said last year, we're going to make this service, and it's going to take all of your photographs, and photos are big files, and it's going to sync them in the cloud, and there's not going to be any problem. And all of us said, yeah, sure. You know, we've all heard this before, right? You know, I mean, yep. Let's be honest. We all thought that. I mean, are they going to actually... And you know what? They delivered. I mean, there are a lot of people using this. There are, you know, I don't know what the term is above terabyte, but there are whatever, you know, there's lots of data moving around the internet right now that involves people's photos with Apple.
Petabyte, by the way.
A petabyte, you know, what Commander Data would know, because he'd have a lot of them. But whatever it is, there's a lot of data flowing through the internet right now to manage people's photos through Apple, and it's largely working pretty well. You know, granted, it's a little funny when you do your first upload, but I think that they've really kind of made a point here that, hey, you know what, they can do this too, and I think that's a really good sign for all of us that like to use Apple stuff.
Yeah, just be patient. I would say the only misstep they had is that they could do a little bit better with the sort of making the upload or let you know what's sort of happening.
Yeah.
So you don't feel, you know, so in the dark. But
we're in version one, so I suspect it's something.
The syncing, and, you know, once it's all up there, everything's been working beautifully for me, and it sounds like it has for you too. And I've heard the same thing from other folks, so I would wholeheartedly agree with that.
In this love fest, I didn't mention a couple other complaints I have with it. Let me do that real quick.
Okay.
Number one is geotagging. You can't do it inside the app, is a bummer.
That'll come back. I have a feeling that was just something they didn't get to.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just on the list. It just didn't make it in the version 1.0. For now, you have to get a separate app if you want to geotag. So if you're taking pictures with a camera that doesn't add location data, You got to take the time to take care of that before you put it in. The other thing that I think they could have done better on is integration with third-party applications. On iOS, it's pretty remarkable since we got, you know, the most iOS 8, how we can, you know, open a picture in Photos, send it to Pixelmator, and then round trip it right back into Photos without ever really leaving the application. Right. I think that would be a great feature on the Mac. I'm sure somebody's thought of it. And it seems to me that could be even easier to implement on the Mac. So I'm hoping that shows up soon too.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are good, valid points.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it, right?
Thanks, Adam. Sorry I took so long.
No, it's great. And, you know, again, this is a big topic to cover. I've covered a few times. It sounds like you've covered a few times, too, and people still have questions. So I do really think this is going to help out, and I appreciate you for taking the time.
I got an email from a reader saying, you know, I like you, but sometimes you're a windbag. And I wrote him back, and I said, yeah, you know what? You got me there. I can't really argue with
you. I'm often guilty of the same thing, but I think most people appreciate it. So thanks. Thanks again. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care, Adam.
So there you go. David Sparks on Photos. I hope you learned some stuff in there. I certainly did, even after the fact that, you know, I've been running Photos for a while, but I learned a couple new things in there. And I hope also that that answers a lot of your questions. I know it may not answer all of them, though. So if you have any feedback for me or David, please feel free to email me, ask additional questions, make additional comments. You know, the MacCast is all about community, so I really want to hear from you. I want to know what you think about this stuff. But that is going to do it for this episode. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors. Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label, also Text Expander Touch for your iOS devices, along with PDF Pen for iPhone and iPad, as well as PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of the great Smile applications over at smilesoftware.com. Gazelle. Gazelle is the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. And lynda.com. Lynda.com helps you learn and keep up to date with your software, pick up brand new skills, or explore new hobbies with their easy-to-follow video tutorials. You can get a free 10-day trial by going to lynda.com/MacCast. That's lynda.com/MacCast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. They're at CacheFly.com, and all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. You can find them at backbeatmedia.com. I also want to let you know that we finished up our RadTech giveaway. We've stopped taking submissions for that, so I will be picking winners, and hopefully some emails will be going out very soon if you happen to be selected for the RadTech giveaway. So I just wanted to give you a quick update on that. Also, as I was saying at the beginning of the show, I'm hoping to get back to you with your regularly scheduled MacCast. We'll be talking a lot, I'm sure, about all of the announcements at WWDC, also any new news and rumors that come along. We'll be covering that as well. If you happen to hear anything or you want to give me any feedback, you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on one of those future episodes, you can email me at maccast@gmail.com. You can also send in audio comments, just, you know, attach an MP3 file, any kind of audio file to your email, and I will get that. If you'd prefer to leave a voicemail, you can call us on the voicemail line. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-I-AM-9. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And if you'd like to follow me on social media, online between shows, I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Google Plus community. That's at google.com/plusMacCast, and the plus is the plus symbol, so plus MacCast on Google Plus. And I hope to see you online, but for now, that's going to do it. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.